fathers and grandfathers here. Happy Father's Day weekend. And for the kids that are here, remember, Dad's Day is tomorrow, in case you forgot. Actually, I kind of forgot. The weeks and the months just kind of go by so quickly now that before you know it, these holidays and things kind of pop up on us. And so normally when there's a holiday or something special going on around the time of a sermon, I'll try to gear it in that direction, you know, so that kind of applies. With this one here, it wasn't possible just because I'm actually filling a spot where Mark was supposed to preach today. He'll be preaching next week. And so I already had this sermon wrote, so I'm just going to present what I have. So that's kind of the reason, but usually I try to gear it that way. But it is a wonderful time to recognize our fathers and spend time with them and also our children. I mean, it's just a good time to remember to spend time together. And even with our Heavenly Father, thankfully we have the Sabbath, which is a reminder every single week that we want to spend with our Heavenly Father. And it's a great, wonderful time. You know, over this last couple of months or so, we've experienced a real roller coaster ride in temperatures. Some weeks we have 90, some weeks we have 60. It seems like the air can't seem to make up its mind what it wants to be. Back on Memorial Day weekend, I decided to go and go camping up north, and I had planned to stay there for the whole weekend and do some biking and some hiking and just kind of get out in nature. And the first night I was there, it was about 37 degrees, I believe, and I froze. And there was also bear warning, so I was afraid to leave my vehicle to go anywhere. So I was stuck there almost the whole night awake, just freezing to death. And so Sabbath, I stayed there because I paid for the weekend. And Rebecca and Jaden came up for the afternoon, and I ended up leaving. I was like, I'm not dealing with this anymore. So it's been just crazy, but the next week it was like 70s. So when we have these changes in temperatures, we notice that you get a lot of storms, right? You know, a lot of weather produces some severe weather Thursday, I'm sorry. We had some of that. I know in Vermont they had a tornado that lasted a couple of minutes up there that carved out a nice path of trees. And around here locally, I know we got some really bad downpours, and thankfully it wasn't as bad as they were saying. But at the end of those storms, and I don't remember if there's anything on Thursday or not, but maybe you saw one, but we get to see something beautiful in creation, our rainbow. And there was one special time that we were having our Bible study, and sometimes we have it outdoors, and my idea was to have it up by the locks up near Fort Ann, and there's a pavilion there with picnic tables, and I said, hey, let's all meet there this week. Yeah, it was a great idea until it started to pour, like sideways pour. And so we were all huddled in the middle of this overhang things to kind of keep from the rain coming through and hitting us. That didn't really work. We all got soaked. But what happened afterwards, it was because it's right along the canal there that goes by Fort Ann. There was a rainbow that started right in that canal and came right out of it. I've never been so close to a rainbow before. And it was beautiful. I mean, I took pictures of it to share, but it was just a beautiful reminder, you know, of that promise that we're going to look at today of the rainbow. And, you know, and as a child, I can remember just thinking of rainbows as being incredible, you know. I mean, especially the first time you see one as a child, you know, it's like, wow, what is that? And, you know, my grandmother used to have these things in the window, and she would watch me quite often, and it was like a prism, so the rainbows would come through, you know, on the floor or wherever, and I just thought it was a really beautiful thing. And, you know, even growing up in the 80s and the 90s, you know, a lot of people liked to wear rainbow colors. I mean, it was normal. I mean, it was just beautiful. I mean, it was just a style almost back then, too, that you wore a variety of different colors. And we even see, you know, in the Bible that, you know, Joseph was given this beautiful arrangement of colors in his robe that he received. And today, you know, I mean, if you ask, you know, especially young people or anybody else, say, what's rainbow represent? What are they going to tell you? You don't have to respond, but I think we all kind of know, like Mihai was saying, you know, today on social media and on everybody's, a lot of these places, Facebook pages, everybody's got, you know, a rainbow design of some kind. There's flags flying outside of homes that have rainbows on them. And, you know, a lot of people now, especially Christians, are afraid to fly a rainbow flag or even have anything rainbow because we're afraid of being associated with, you know, with this movement of people that believe, you know, living this lifestyle that's not really what a Christian would say is appropriate. But it's taken the rainbow from being something that was really embraced by everybody to now being held as a symbol of something that is anti what God designed us to be. And that's not what my message is about today. I'm not trying to go down that road in this topic. But it's right in our face now. And it's good for us to be, I think, reminded, especially young people that are so hit with this now and what the meaning is to them, to know really what the rainbow represented in Scripture. So what I would like us to do this morning, and Opal's already heard this message, so don't give anything away. I preached this last week at the church that she was visiting also. But we're going to start in Genesis chapter 1, literally in the beginning, verses 1 through 10. So there'll be some flipping around here through, mainly in Genesis this morning. Won't be going too far. But this is what it says. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. God called the night day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. Then God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. So the evening and the morning were the second day. Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. So before our Creator began to shape and to form and breathe life into our planet Earth, as we call it, the Bible tells us that it was covered in water, void of life. No trees, no visible ground, and certainly no living creatures. It was void, it was empty, and sat in darkness. It was on the second day of creation, after light was introduced, that the waters were separated by this expanse called the firmament. Today we would call that the sky, or the first heavens. And on the second day, an envelope of water would surround the planet and the atmosphere, shielding it from any harmful debris or radiation coming from the sun. It was like our very own force field. The rest of the waters gathered together to form seas, and you'll notice it does not say oceans. At creation, our planet was not meant to be covered in vast bodies of water. It was meant to have plenty of fresh water, but also land mass to provide areas of habitation for all the people to come, as well as enough water for life to flourish. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 2 now, verses 5 and 6. "Before any plant of the field was in the earth, and before any herb of the field had grown, for the Lord had not caused it to rain on the earth, and there was no man to till the ground. But a mist went up from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground." Let's also quickly look at verse 10 of chapter 2. "Now a river went out of Eden to water the garden, and from there it parted and became four river heads." So can you imagine this now? Not having to water your garden? How many people really do not like that task in the middle of the summer? I don't like it. You always have to haul the whole garden hose out. I got 150 feet for Kamaya this year, so she can reach all the way over the sign. And it's a lot of work. She probably won't tell you, but it is. You got to haul that thing all the way over there, and you got to wrap it all back up. It's not pleasant. I don't think so, at least. But here, God had created that the world would have its own sprinkler system, let's say. Okay, so it says that these rivers came out of the Garden of Eden, that they watered the garden. And so I think that underground, that there was also these aquifers and these underground rivers and things that were part of this this water system that, you know, then came up out of the ground. And it says that a mist came up. Wouldn't that be wonderful, just a mist that just appeared every night? And then in the morning, it just soaked into the ground, and you didn't have to worry about it. Everything just flourished off of this system. It was perfect. God created it. Of course it was. So also, this envelope of water that surrounded the earth, I can imagine the sun probably appeared different. I don't know if they can necessarily see it like we can see it today. But it wasn't baking the planet in this heat that was unbearable. Like I said, we experienced these contrasts, 30 degrees, 100 degrees, you know, and the 100 degrees is usually not very bearable. But back then, the planet was perfectly aligned. It hadn't shifted yet, and the sun was hitting it just the perfect amount so that it almost created a greenhouse effect, and it was comfortable. It was wonderful. I mean, Adam and Eve were able to walk around in perfect comfort without having to be either too hot or too cold. Just wonderful. So things were great here on planet Earth. And even after sin happened, we noticed that it didn't seem to really change too much as far as the atmosphere and the way things were going. And it did say that man would till the ground now, where it said he wasn't doing that then. But now that he would be, still the watering seems like it was taken care of by God. It still allowed this mist to come in and water the planet. As time passed following the expulsion from the garden home, people on earth became increasingly wicked. We skip forward a couple chapters here now to chapter 6, verses 5 through 6 first, and then 11 through 12. When the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually, and the Lord was sorry that he had made man the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. Verse 11 and 12. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. The beautiful planet that God had created was now experienced the full brunt of what sin does. People were just continually thinking of wicked, awful things. Their minds were full of just lust for whatever they wanted, they would just take. And I was listening to a Seventh-day Adventist. He's a YouTube guy. I don't think he's a preacher, but well, he kind of preaches on there, but I don't think he's a pastor. And he was talking about the Epstein files, which I don't really know a lot about. I mean, I heard about it. I kind of had an idea of what it was, but I didn't know what was in them, and now I really don't want to know what's in them. But he was kind of talking about it and kind of giving an explanation. So I said, well, listen, maybe it'll give me a little more up to speed of what this whole thing is actually about. And he started to read part of what has been revealed. And I got about maybe 2 minutes into it, and I shut it off. I won't tell you what I heard. I wish I could unhear what I heard. But if you think that child sacrifice is only in the Old Testament and in Noah's time, it is happening now too. I'll just say that and leave it there. It's disgusting. And so what was happening back in Noah's time was this to probably a tenth degree. It was a filthy, filthy world. We talked about this a little bit at our Bible study this week, and somebody asked, how could God be so loving for him to destroy everyone? And so we came up with a conclusion and had some thoughts about that. And my thought is that if you understood just how debased and evil and wicked and demon-possessed these people were, you would realize that they had gone past the point of being saved. But even so, God gave them time. And I want to take a look at that also here in just a moment. Let's look at verse 7 and 8 of chapter 6. So the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and the birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. The only solution will be to destroy everything while there still remained a small group that still were loyal to him. Some may think that this was an easy thing for God to do. I don't think that was the case at all. Can you imagine the hurt he must have felt looking down on these people that were doing things that were just horrible? He had created each one of them, and they were doing despicable things that we wouldn't even want to look on today. But he knew it was the only thing that was left to do to save the planet from destroying itself, because it would have if it kept going on. So I want you to try to imagine that you're building a custom home for your family. Finest quality materials that money can buy. No expense spared. You just have unlimited funds. So you have a neighbor that's a little jealous. Doesn't like that you're building such a nice place. And he doesn't think that you should have such a nice place and wants to ruin it for you. So while the family is away, he comes in there and he infects the home with a mold that will slowly grow undetected, but will hurt those that occupy that home. You know, when you find out about this, and the only way to save your family is to burn the place down. But you give those inside an opportunity to leave if they want to. The problem is they don't see any need to. It's a beautiful home. Why would I want to leave? Where am I going to go? Why would I trust you? You've given us everything we need here. We're having a good life. How happy would you be about that, to know that you have to destroy your family along with the home, because if not, they were going to die in the end anyways? Verse 6 shows how much this affected God. It says that it had grieved him in his heart of the condition of the people. And of course, I'm sure that grief extended to what he was going to have to do to provide a chance for humanity to live on. Verse 8 shows us that remained a family of a man named Noah. And starting in verses 13 through 22, we see God speaking with Noah, giving him instructions here in chapter 6. And here's what it says, and some of this has already been read. God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through him, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and outside with pitch. And this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, its width 50 cubits, and its height 30 cubits. You shall make a window for the ark, and you shall finish it to a cubit from above, and set the door of the ark on its side. You shall make it with a lower, second, and third decks. And behold, I myself am bringing floodwaters on the earth, to destroy from under heaven all flesh in which is the breath of life. Everything on this earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall go into the ark. You, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives living with you. And of every living thing of all flesh you shall bring two of every sort into the ark, to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds after their kind, of animals after their kind, and of every creeping thing of the earth after its kind, two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. And you shall take for yourself of all food that is eaten, you shall gather it to yourself, and it shall be food for you and for them." Thus Noah did according to all that God commanded he did. He was to build a large boat in a land that did not need a boat, especially of that size. There were to be floods that no one had experienced due to the weather still being rather peaceful, and the rivers probably had never overflowed. This act on Noah's part brought criticism for sure. In verse 3 of chapter 6, God proclaimed that he would give mankind 120 more years. In that time, Noah would build the ark, and as it says in 2 Peter 2:5, he would be a preacher of righteousness. Noah, for 120 years, while building this large ark, pleaded with the people that lived during his time. If anyone were to accept the offer to turn from wickedness and be saved, there would have been room enough for them. There was plenty of time to add additions if needed. But we know that the ark was built for just the right size. We don't know what effects the preaching had on the people for sure, but in 120 years, it's quite possible there were people that turned from the wickedness but died before the floods came. And we know that Noah's father was alive but did pass away before the floods came. So I'm sure there were many others, maybe they even helped build the ark, that were too old and just passed away before it happened and accepted the message. I'm sure that we'll meet people in heaven that will say, hey, I accepted that message, but I passed away before the ark came and I'm here. So it probably did happen more than we realize. Unfortunately, the vast majority of people refused and mocked Noah for his foolish idea to build a boat, especially that big, in a land that would not flood. And surely, definitely not a flood that would require a boat that big. When the ark was complete and the time frame had ended, Noah in chapter 7 is asked to come into the ark and to bring in now 7 of every clean animal and 2 of every unclean and 7 of every bird of the air. Upon entering the ark with all these animals, the Lord shut them in. For 7 days they waited in the ark before a single drop of rain fell. Following the 7th day, verse 11 of chapter 7 says, the fountains of the great deep were broken up and the windows of heaven opened. So this is not your regular storm. This is not like the worst tornado hurricane that you've ever experienced. This is an earthquake that is on a scale that we have never experienced on this earth, breaking apart the ground, and you've got water just shooting up out of the ground. In combination with that, now you've also got this envelope of water that's up top that has never been ruptured, has now been ruptured, and it's coming down. Can you imagine the people now are thinking, oh boy, maybe I should have listened? I don't think there was much time for these people to even have time to even think. I'm sure many perished very quickly. Mrs. White does tell us that some were grabbing onto beasts of burden to see if they would take them to a higher point to get away from the flood. I don't think it was very many people, though. This flood was just massive in scale. And if you've seen a flood go with your community with rocks and sticks and trees and people's homes going down through there, there is no way you're going to survive that. I know that in this instance, the Lord was merciful, and I think he ended their lives very quickly. I don't think people were suffering to death. I think he did this fairly quickly, and so that, again, it was done and it was over. But the raining continued for 40 days and 40 nights, as we know. The earth now had returned to its state back in Genesis 1:2, covered in water. The darkness was probably great now that this envelope had been broken and clouds of storm were overhead. And it was void of life except for one family and some animals and the creeping things. Have you ever noticed that? He even mentions those things that we really don't like, the creeping things. All the little spiders and all the little centipedes, all that stuff that we don't like to see in our house. The Lord even cared about them, and he saved them too, and he mentions it in his word that they were important just as well. Formless, void, dark. The sky that was once beautiful is now angry. The Lord sent angels for sure to protect this vessel. I believe there's a place in Mrs. White's writings that said that this ark would not have survived the velocity of the storm. But angels kept them safe. God kept them safe, and what was inside this ark. The rain did not stop, or the rain did stop, but God sent a wind to pass over the earth to begin this process of removing the water. And he wanted to make it possible for the family of Noah to again leave the ark. After 370 days, a little longer than a year, they were able to leave the ark and step out onto dry ground, release the animals and the creeping things to make homes in this new to them world. I've never been on a cruise before. Maybe some of you have. But after 7 or 9 days, I've heard that you just want to get off the boat. Can you imagine being on a boat that's not a cruise liner, that has all the amenities, but all you have is a lot of animals making a lot of noise and needing a whole lot of things? How bad do you want to get off the boat after 370 days? Yeah, I'm sure they were rushing to get that door open once the Lord opened it up. But he kept them safe. They did survive. We now come to the promise that God gave to Noah and his family in chapter 9. And this is what was read before from 8 to 17, but I want us to look at it again as we read. And like Mihai was saying, this is important for us to know. It's important for us to remember. Then God spoke to Noah and to his sons with him, saying, "As for me, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you, of all that go out of the ark, every beast of the earth. Thus I establish my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." And God said, "This is a sign of the covenant which I make between me and you, and every living creature that is with you, for perpetual generations. I set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. It shall be, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the rainbow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant which is between me and you, and every living creature of all flesh. The water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. The rainbow shall be in the cloud, and I will look on it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth." And God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth." A rainbow appeared in the sky that now held clouds of moisture. Again, probably something that they had never seen before. What do you think Noah and his family were going to think every time they saw a cloud or a storm approach? Do you think they might question whether it was going to happen again? Most likely. We know later on in the story, a few chapters down, they really started questioning. They wanted to build their own tower because they weren't even believing what God was saying. But he says, "I give you this beautiful reminder, a reminder that has lasted all the way from that time till today, that when we see a storm cloud, that the Lord promised that it would never happen again by flood." Not only did the ground look different when they emerged from the ark, but the sky had also changed. The sun now penetrated through without a layer of water surrounding the planet, and as it hit the droplets of rain, it split into the colors of the rainbow. The promise was a promise of love to all people. He had given humanity another chance to turn from wickedness to know their Creator. Unfortunately, it didn't take long before mankind was back at it again, trying to replace God with their own idols and love of self. Nearly 4,000 years later, we see a world that is quickly beginning to look like the times of Noah. Both Luke and Matthew state that as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Time is coming to a close for this planet. We will face times of difficulty in this life. Storms will arise, winds will blow. And maybe today you're going through one of those storms. You can feel the wind in your face, the relentless rain soaking your skin. You just want it to be over. But God gives us promises. And here's just a few that I would like us to look at as we close today. I'm going to give them kind of slowly so they can pull them up on the screen here for you. The first one is Isaiah 41, verse 10. "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Again, Isaiah 26, verse 3. "You keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you, because he trusts in you." John 16, 33. "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." Psalm 37, 23 and 24. "The Lord makes firm the steps of the one who delights in him. Though he may stumble, he will not fall, for the Lord upholds him with his hand." In Matthew 11, 28 and 29. "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. And this verse takes me to think about another rainbow, another arc. And maybe you've never heard about them. Maybe you know what I'm talking about, and maybe you don't. I would like us to take a look now from the first chapter of the Bible all the way to the end, the last chapter in Revelation. It's amazing how the Bible kind of does that too. It kind of goes, it begins one way and it kind of almost ends the same. Chapter 4 of Revelation, verses 1 through 3. And if this is new to you, it's really cool. So I'm hoping that maybe this is something new for somebody today. After these things I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice which I heard was like a trumpet speaking with me, saying, "Come up here, and I will show you things which must take place after this." Immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne set in heaven, and one sat on the throne. And he who sat there was like a jasper and a sardius stone in appearance. And there was a rainbow around the throne in appearance like an emerald. John here does his best to describe what he is seeing. And obviously everything he's given in Revelation is new to him. He was just doing his best in his human wisdom to describe to us as we're reading what he's seeing. But what he sees here is God's throne. And he sees this rainbow that is just in brilliance like an emerald just surrounding him. Absolutely beautiful. That he uses the symbol of his promise in Genesis, but that he has this symbol constantly around his throne. And I believe around him as his appearance is. So let's also look to Revelation chapter 11, verse 19. Then the temple of God was opened in heaven. Again, he's seeing into here. And the ark of his covenant was seen in his temple. And there were lightnings, noises, thunderings, earthquakes, and a great hail. Here in heaven in this temple, we see the ark, another ark, of the covenant. In God's presence is this rainbow surrounding him. And here lies in this ark that holds the words of his holy law and character. In the midst of that law, we know there is a commandment to rest. We also know that that commandment was also given as a sign of his people too. Very interesting. To trust God and to remind us that he is our creator, our recreator, and we have no reason to fear what the world may throw at us. Just as Noah and his family were saved by entering the ark, we too are saved as we give our lives to Christ and desire to become more like him, to love him. And our love for him is shown in how his character becomes our character. Hebrews 10:16 says, "This is the covenant that I will make with them after those days, says the Lord. I will put my law in their heart, or laws in their hearts, and in their minds I will write them." This is why in John 14:15 it says, "If you love me, keep my commandments." Noah reflected his love for God by listening to what God said and obeying. We too are to know and love God so well that we are obedient to his commandments without even thinking about it. We talked about it in Sabbath school this morning. It should be natural to us. We shouldn't have to even think about that we're keeping his commandments. If we have to force ourselves to keep the commandments, it's not out of love. Keeping them will be a result of our love for God. When we experience difficult times, may we be reminded of the wonderful character of God and his love for us. May we meditate as David did on his law, as we find in Psalm 1:2, where he says, "But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night." If we keep God in the forefront of our minds through the good days and the bad days, we will come through them safely to the other side. And when those days come and we receive the seal of God in our foreheads, we can be assured that we too will escape the next and final destruction of the wicked and of evil, which next time will be by fire. The rainbow around the Ark of the Covenant reminds us that God promises to protect us and save us from this flood of fire if we will trust Him with our lives and love Him with our hearts. And I want to leave you with one last promise that God gives us in John chapter 14, verses 1 through 4. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe in me as well. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I am going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and welcome you into my presence, so that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going. The Lord is coming soon. We see it all around us. The signs are there. And as we talked about in Sabbath school this morning, this message kind of goes with that a little bit, that we want to share with people while we still have the time. In America, we, I think, take for granted for the freedom that we have to be able to meet together, to be able to share with others. I've looked at some of these places. I think of even in Iran and what they're going through there and other places where there is only one religion. And what can happen to you if you even make a mention that you're a Christian? We have it so good here, and we have an opportunity to say the name of Christ without repercussions. But why are we so afraid to do so? Why are we so shy to talk about the one that we love the most? We shouldn't. We should share with those that we know, those that we may not know, and be the example that we need to be. It says that Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Let us be like Noah. Let's tell our people about this hope that we have, that they too can be saved. And that hope is found in the commandments that we know that God gave to us of His character. Let's share how beautiful they are and how trusting in the Lord to save us from sin is such a beautiful and wonderful thing. It will be life-changing. So let's remember the promises of God. Let's remember when we see that rainbow. Maybe it's on somebody's flag. I know it's tough to look at sometimes, especially when in the front of churches. There are some churches that embrace that. But let it be a reminder now more than ever that God promises to be with us and that He promises that there will be a future for us soon. Amen.